form.
Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hello, folks. This is Dave Gahari. Hope I'm coming through loud and clear on the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. Thank you, Elizabeth. It is 6:02 p.m. Central Time, Sunday, April 21, 2024. Here we go. Okay, so we have one more show in April, and then we're into May already. What the hell? What the heck? How did that happen? So, the show, for those of you who are not familiar with this show, if you're new to it, this is the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where Dr. David Duke takes questions and comments from anywhere in the world, and he has a whopping 2 minutes to answer those questions and comments, or comment about the comment, and then about 15 seconds before his 2 minutes runs out, you'll hear that sound, and then on that two-minute mark, it'll happen again, and the 2 minutes is all dependent upon how many folks are clamoring to ask him a question. So we have a studio, and we have a waiting room, and we only have can allow a certain number of people in the waiting room in the studio. So if you just want to listen to the show and you don't want to call in and ask a question or a comment, just go to speakfreeradio.com and press that little black triangle, and you can listen to it there. If you're on your phone, there's a phone icon. Click on that phone icon, and you can listen that way. Okay, so we do this show every Sunday night at this time for 2 hours. It was a one-hour show. We had to bump it up to 2 hours. You can take a look at the schedule on Speak Free Radio and look at all the programming we have. We have a bunch of new shows now, actually. We have a new show coming aboard this week, Monday and Wednesday, I think from 11 to 1 Eastern. It doesn't show on the schedule yet because schedule recycles after midnight Eastern tonight. A new show that started about a week ago from 8 to 10 p.m. Yeah, this is all Eastern on the schedule on Speak Free Radio. Davis Lerman, Right Perspective Radio with Davis Lerman. That's Monday through Friday, 2 hours each night, so check it out. It's pretty cool. Ryan Massano is on a new time, or he's in a new time slot, 5 to 7 Eastern on Saturdays. And an hour later, the Hoaxbusters are on. They've been on for quite some time. Of course, Inside the Eye Live with Dennis Fetcho, that's from 11 to 2 on Saturdays. But feel free to check it out. A lot of great hosts, a lot of great shows. If you want to call into the show, you click on the call and chat button, and you select the appropriate icon of the show that you want to call into. And in this case, of course, it's a Dave and Duke Call-In Show, and you'll go into the waiting room. We don't have a phone number for you to call in yet. If you want to listen to some of the old shows, click on the podcast tab and select the appropriate icon for the show. And that's it. That's how to do it. Okay, so let's... the ongoing challenge. All right. Here it is. If anyone out there can let us know of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech other than Robert from Yuma? No, that's a joke. Other than organized international Jewry? Let us know and we'll quit. Also, if you can let us know of a more effective deliverer of that message other than Dr. David Duke, you let us know and we'll quit right away. I promise you'll quit. And I don't want to interrupt Dave while he's chowing down on his dinner. which I can see. So, Dave, don't. What? That's pizza.
I'm almost done. Yeah.
No, that's good. That looks good, man. Nice. Take your time. Take your time, Dave. Keep chewing. I'm going to remove you from here so you can enjoy your dinner. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Well, okay? I'm right here.
I know. Okay. All righty then. So that's the challenge. And the show is what I explained before. And we will we'll get into it in a few minutes. Let's see, just for the heck of it. Oh, actually, I do have something to announce while Dave is munching on that pizza. A friend of both of ours, Jason Kessler, he is coming out with a new book on Charlottesville. And it's called Charlottesville and the Death of Free Speech. And you can go to his website, which is dissident.press. So dissident.press. And you can check it out. You can also go to his X page, where he's got this promo for it with a cool video. And I'll put it in the private chat here. And he also has it on Gab. So you can go to Gab and you can check it out. I'll put that in there too. So Jason, of course, was the, organizer of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville on August 12, 2017. And that event, although it only lasted literally a very short while, has really had a huge impact on all of us. And most of us are not even aware of why that is or what that impact is. So this book will talk about that. And Jason's a great guy. And support him, get his book, and learn about Charlottesville and learn about his part in it. And well, if he wasn't there, obviously the thing wouldn't exist. But learn about the things that you didn't know about Charlottesville, which were very significant and are very significant. And, of course, the Raving Lunatics on the left hijacked that event to push what they have been pushing. And Jason explains in great detail, how it started, how he got involved in it, and what he went through because of these dirtbags on the left, the unhinged left. And, of course, Dave was there for that event. So make sure you check that out. All right, Dave.
Okay.
How was the pizza?
Great.
Yeah?
I don't eat too much pizza. But
no.
Once in a while.
No, but it's always good to have pizza.
Well, true.
Good pizza is good. That looked good too. It looked like pepperoni was on it, and what was it, like a deluxe?
It was
PS.
It was an Italian pizza, and I bought it. It's Sicilian pizza. It's not out of a California company that is they don't have any seed oils in it. It's only good olive oil that they have in it.
Right.
And I'm a believer in organic, or what we call extra virgin olive oil.
So, right. So it was a frozen pizza.
Believe it or not, but years ago, when people got married, generally speaking, in the United States of America and in European lands, for most of our history, when women got married, they were extra virgin.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, extra virgin.
Well, whatever it means. It means they were very virgin.
They were really virgins, yes.
But yeah, they were definitely, and they were, yeah.
Dave, believe it or not, we are already filled up in the waiting room.
Well, we got lots to talk about, because since last week, we have, in my opinion, we have gone directly into a complete, absolutely unassailable, undeniable Jewish dictatorship of the United States of America. And why do we know that? Well, there's lots of barometers in the room.
Well, Dave, we got to get to the calls first, so let's go
I can take a couple of minutes here.
All right, take a couple minutes, and we'll get to the calls, and we can come back to it. We don't have any calls.
Let me frame the show real clearly, okay? And let me frame the historical importance of where we are right now in America, all right? We had an impeachment, and we have a secretary of the person who's in charge of our homeland security, now a cabinet position, is Alejandro Mayorkas. But don't be fooled. He's not a Hispanic. His books, his biography stresses the fact that he may have a Hispanic-sounding name, but he's actually Jewish. And that's what he's really proud of. He doesn't care about the Spanish aspect of his name or his family's adoption of this name. He was a Morano Jew, which means he was his family was secret Jews that while they claimed to be Christian publicly, they cursed the name of Jesus Christ. And that's the way they did it back then. They cursed the name because the people of Spain had a lot of problem with the Jews because the Jews in the country sold out the country to the Muslim invaders. The same way that Mr. Mayorkas has sold out America as head of the Homeland Security Division, who was supposed to enforce American immigration laws. He allowed millions of non-U.S. citizens to break American law. It's a serious offense to go into the United States or in any country of the world without going through customs or immigration. Because we want to know, obviously, every country wants to know who's coming in. Are you criminals? Are you bringing drugs in? Are you escaping from some other criminal act? And you're violating the law when you enter a country illegally. And he enabled millions of to. And then he was impeached properly by the United States Congress. And the Constitution is really clear on this. The Constitution says that the House of Representatives is the body because they consider it the public body. It's the closest body of election to the people because of the 435 representatives. We're talking about much more representatives per capita. People get to know their congressmen a lot better than they know a particular senator or a state. And they consider it to be the House of the people. And they have the responsibility, the constitutional responsibility, of deciding whether or not an elected or appointed official of the United States government deserves to be impeached. In other words, by breaking American law, by committing high crimes or misdemeanors, or whatever they did in terms of violation of law. Now, every congressman is sworn to uphold the laws of the United States of America, to enforce the laws of the United States of America. Now, in many ways, they don't enforce the laws of America. But what this shows so greatly is the presentation, the idea that the Congress has the authority and, in fact, the duty to impeach anyone who holds public office, who is found in violation of that oath and who is committing crimes and damage and destruction to the United States of America. And Mayorkas was a board member of the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. It's a Jewish organization that takes credit, in fact, for being the most powerful organization in America that was established to overturn our immigration laws in America and to literally change America and replace the founding population of America from a European-American Christian population to another population to make us a minority in our own country. Now, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is over 100 years old, and they supported the Immigration Acts. The 1924, they opposed the 1924 Immigration Restriction Acts. And back in the 1920s, America was a 90% country. We were 90% all the way up until the 1970s. I was at LSU. In fact, by the time I was a senior at LSU, we started dropping below 90%. Until today, we're approaching about 60% or less. and we are slated to become outnumbered and outvoted in our country. So the House of Representatives investigated, spent months doing it, and they impeached by law, by provided by the Constitution, the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas, and they submitted it to the Senate. Now, the Senate's job is not to decide whether or not someone's indicted. That's the responsibility of the House. That's in the Constitution of the United States very, very clearly. In a direct article, the Constitution says the House's job is to present to the Senate anyone they deem to be impeached. And then the Senate's duty by the Constitution is to hold a trial for that individual where evidence is presented. And then there is a vote. So it's like almost like a criminal proceeding against that individual. And then they are impeached or whether they're not. Now, in all the impeachments, and there are a bunch of them, 25 in the history of the country, except those that resigned. So it was a moot case where they were going to be removed from office, but they resigned because of the impeachment, or simply because they, you know, they gave up. They realized that they didn't have any authority in terms of the individuals to resist the impeachment. In every case we had where a person was still in office, they had a trial. All that was abrogated by the Jewish dictator of the United States Senate, which is Chucky Schumer boy, Jewish Schumer boy, whose name is Schäuble. And as he said before the AIPAC, he said, quote, now I'll quote him exactly. He said, "My name is Schäuble." And that's an old Jewish name from the Galicia area in the East, in Eastern Europe. And Schäuble means guardian. And for my entire life, I will always be dedicated to the Jewish people. And Schäuble means guardian, that we guard the walls of the Jewish community. And I am your guardian. I'm a guardian of the Jewish people. He didn't say he was a guardian of the people in New York State that he's supposed to represent in the United States Senate, in America, in the United States Senate. No, he's a guardian of the Jews. Now, when the Senate...
Dave, it's almost 20 after. Just
I got it. But
we got to get to the calls. Dave, remember.
Finished. I'm going to finish.
Okay,
here.
Okay. All right, okay. But it's a call. Dave, but it's a call-in show.
I know it is.
Okay, so...
I can say a couple words to begin.
Okay, all right. I'm just letting you know it's almost 20 after.
So
okay.
This is important, right? So,
yeah, it's I understand. Dave,
so
understand.
It's a call-in show. The Democratic Party and these Jews that run America and this Jewish secretary, a guy who is supposed to protect our homeland, who was a part of an organization that was to overthrow and destroy the American people and to make us a minority in our own country. They threw out the case. They just simply dismissed it without having a trial, without hearing one bit of evidence in the case. We don't have a constitution. We don't have a government of the people. We don't have a democracy. We have a Jewish dictatorship which rules over this country. We did have an overthrow. It wasn't the constitutional protest that existed in the United States Congress of people with no weapons. We had a coup staged by the Jews like Nadler and Schiff and Engel in the United States Congress and Schumer and these other Jews. We had a coup against Donald Trump and against the duly elected president of the United States. And now we've capped it off with a complete Jewish dictatorship over this country and making sure that a person who's violating the laws of the United States of America is able to change the demographic of this country and commit a vast crime against the American people. We don't have an American democracy. We don't have a constitution anymore. And that's where we stand different than a week ago in last week's show.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Okay. Yes. Awesome. Let's go to our first caller. We got Russ. Russ, where are you from again? What state?
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Right, Minnesota. Right. The whitest of states in the past. Yes. Go ahead, Russ. What was your question or comment for Dave?
North Dakota is whiter, but we're not doing too bad.
Yeah, sure.
I agree with everything that you guys have said about the evils of organized international Zionism. But I would like to ask, you know, as far as the challenge that you mentioned at the top of the show, it seems to me that when it comes to the actual threat of physical violence, like, say, from having your throat cut, for example, that Europeans and white folks in general face a greater existential threat from radical Islam than they do from Jewish supremacism. And let me know if you think I'm incorrect about that.
Yeah, well, sir, respectfully, and I understand your opinion, and I am a Christian, and I certainly want to maintain the heritage of our country, no question about it. I'm obviously not Islamic. I'm a Christian. I obviously want to preserve the European aspects of our heritage in our country. But you've got to understand something here. This country, the reason why we've had to change the immigration law, allowing whatever the vast non-Christian immigration, the vast non-European immigration in the country to make us a minority in our own country, the hatred that is being spouted, what's the word for it, spewed over the hearts and the minds of the American people, including our young people who are being taught to hate themselves. All these processes that are going on have not, it's not the Muslims, it's not Iran, it's sure in the hell not the Palestinians who have destroyed the United States of America, who've opened our borders. It's not these people who've taken over our Federal Reserve and our banks. It's not these people who've taken over our media and prevent us from exercising freedom of speech. You've done all the so-called censorship that exists in YouTube. YouTube and Alphabet on all these other groups, Facebook, and the mainstream media and the Hollywood media is all run by Jews. And these Jews are actually far more anti-Christian. In fact, I'm telling you something. I'll tell you something honest to you. The Jewish religion is anti-Christ. And there's no arguing about this fact. The Jews have a book called the Talmud. That is their chief law. In that book, they literally say that they have made Christ, they've taken Christ out of hell, just so they could punish him and boil him in human excrement for eternity. That's how Jews and the Jewish religion, organized Jewry, and the state of Israel, which, by the way, makes it a law, it's 5 years in prison in Israel, to be what's called, what they call an evangelical. Ironically, we've got some very sick, disturbed, corrupted Christians who can't even read the New Testament, who don't even know what's in the New Testament, don't even realize that the Jews cursed the New Testament as an anti-Semitic book. They curse the New Testament more than they do the Protocols of Zion. I can show you an article from the Jerusalem Post where Rabbi Botich, the same guy that was supporting the massacre and the murder of Palestinian children. And by the way, up until this takeover of the evangelicals in this country by the Jews, by the way, and the Jewish propaganda, about half of the Palestinians in what became Israel and the occupied territories in Gaza today, half of the people, half of the Palestinians were Christians. And they've had Christian communities that followed Jesus Christ since literally shortly after the time of Christ. Christ's life was a struggle against the same kinds of Jews that run Judaism today. He opposed their lies. He opposed their view of God. He also, in so many ways, persecuted Christians, including leading the persecution and the murder of Jesus Christ. And the New Testament and the words of Jesus Christ specifically call out the Jews. In fact, you can read it in John 8. Go to John 8, 44. Just pick out your New Testament. I dare you. I promise you. And in that chapter, Jesus Christ says, quote, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." You know, that's the most common quote for free speech. I think Jesus Christ was a free speech advocate and a truth advocate. And the truth is, the real truth is, in that chapter, he has these discussions with the Jewish Pharisees. They were the Jewish elite, just like the Jewish elite of today, the major Jewish organizations, which, by the way, changed their immigration law, supported the creation of the Federal Reserve, supported the rise of communism all over the world, supported the destruction of American industry and business, have corrupted us, started the LGBTism, has tried to destroy, get people to destroy our own organs, lowered the birth rate. of Europeans. There's no question about it. So none of the things you talk about, none of the threats you say of Islamics, and there are some radical Islamists, I'm sure, compare in any way to the Jews. We wouldn't even be feeling the threat of that, except for the Jews. The truth is that the Quran, even though I'm not a Quranist, I'm not an Islamic, the Quran actually defends Jesus Christ from the Jews and defends his mother, Mary, says that they believe he was resurrected by God. He's considered their greatest prophet. While Jews condemn all Christians and say the best of the Christians and the best of the Goyim, which is what you are and your family, the non-Jews of this country and the Jews and the non-Jews of Europe and the non-Jews of the whole world, say that you and your family are evil, that you're fundamentally evil. You have evil souls while Jews have only holy souls, and that Jews are supposed to rule over you like gods, and you have to submit to Jewish laws. And the reason why that we are in this trouble we're in right now, sir, is because this country, long before there were immigrants coming into the country, and if you want to talk about black crime, you can talk about that. You want to talk about Islamic threat of terrorism, fine. That's all true. None of that would be a pinprick in our skin, except for the Jews. The only reason, in fact, that we had the rise of Islamic, the jihad, Al-Qaeda is a perfect example. Who started Al-Qaeda? Who financed Al-Qaeda? It was Jews. It was the Jews who ran the U.S. government who supported Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda, under Osama bin Laden, was fighting the Russians. Now, why did they hate the Russians? Well, they hated the Russians even in the 80s. Because they knew the Russian people were overthrowing the Jewish communists that killed tens of millions of fellow Christians in Russia. That's why they supported. There wouldn't even have been a Osama bin Laden. There wouldn't have been a 9/11. There wouldn't have been an Al-Qaeda or ISIS or any of this without the Jews. In fact, ISIS itself was supported by Israel and was supported by our own American government, which worked with the Saudis behind it. Go and read the 9/11 inquiry, which was a joint commission for the Congress of the United States, for both houses of the Congress. And in there, they have 28 pages redacted, which hides the connection. It was also done by a Jew who is heading the commission, who hide the connection with the Saudis and how the Jewish controllers of American intelligence, the American government, the CIA, which is taking away our freedoms and destroying our country, these were the people who were behind the rise of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and radical Islam. They did that. They supported that. They didn't care what it would do to Europe. They didn't care what it would do to Christians in Syria or even Christians in Iraq. We had an Iraq war based on it. All they did it was because they wanted the radical Islamics to kill Christians and kill others and kill their enemies in Syria who are not enemies of Christianity. In fact, Syria is...
All right, Dave, we got to get to the next call.
Last thing, there's not a single Christian in the cabinet of Israel. Israel has laws against Christians, and yet we just decided to send them $26 billion a year tax money instead of spending it, a fraction of that, to secure our borders. So, sir, respectfully say to you that it's not the Islamics that have caused the destruction of America, who changed our morals, who've destroyed our faith, destroyed our traditions. It's the Islamics who got Mayorkas from being impeached for violating the Constitution of the United States. It was the Jews who controlled the Senate, Mr. Schleimer, and the Jews that control the House, and the Jews that control our media, and the Jews that control our banking system, the Jews that are the overwhelming majority of the people give the finance money, and he who pays the piper calls the tune in America. And that is why our people in an existential crisis today. I respectfully submit that to you for your purview and your thoughts.
All right, Russ, we'll get you back in, buddy. Hey, Russ, do me a favor. Someone in the audience asked if you can adjust your camera because they're sick and tired of looking at your refrigerator. Can you adjust the camera so it goes to your face?
Yeah, Russ, they want to see your face, nothing.
Yeah, Russ, come on, do it now. Keep going, Russ. Keep going. Oh, man, you look like John Goodman. Can you lift it up a little bit more so we can see the top of your head?
Keep going, Russ.
Russ, keep going.
Thank you for your question.
And Russ.
It's those kind of questions. You know, the questions is what get us to the truth. The reason why we have science...
Hold on, Dave. He's trying to say something to you. Go ahead, Russ.
I just want to finish this sentence. The reason why we have science and truth is because people ask good questions. And the question you asked was a great question, and I appreciate it.
I think that there are... I know that there are Muslims, educated ones, who would agree with you, but the problem is that organizations like ISIS, the people are not very educated, and they consider Christians and Jews to be both one and the same part of the enemy.
I just want you to understand something. The Jewish government of Israel attacked America with terrorism. They attacked the USS Liberty, an American ship with Navy people on it. 34 died. 173 wounded. They knew it was an American ship. The American flag was all over it. They buzzed the ship for days and days and days. They also attacked American installations in Egypt. A expat community in Egypt to try to get us into a war. They were also the most damaging spy in all of American history. And the Jews are the ones who launched communism. Now, if you think Islam is a threat, how about in 1980, and in fact during the Clinton administration, where the United States Congress unanimously made a resolution about the 100 million people who were murdered by communism in the world? I hope by now, and you're learning, I don't know how new you are or all this, but you're learning that communism was a Jewish invention. It was started by Karl Marx. His real name was Halevi. Right? He was a Jew, a long line of rabbis. The guy that co-wrote the Communist Manifesto was a guy named Moses Hess, who was also a Zionist. Jews ran communism all over the world. Read my book, Jewish Supremacism. Read my book, My Awakening. And read the documentation of the Jewish role in communism. Now, in communism, in Russia alone, and in Ukraine, they killed 30 million Christians.
Dave, we got to get to the next call. All right, we'll come back to this.
Is there any comparison between what Jews have done to Christians historically?
It's the Muslims. Russ, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Thanks, sir. The reason we even have a Muslim problem is because we have Jews controlling our government.
Exactly.
And they
were
very happy to use that.
100%. And here's the troublemaker from Yuma, Arizona, Robert.
Robert, there he
is. Okay,
Robert,
go ahead, buddy.
Dr. Duke. Thank you. I want to know how the Muslim establishment was able to legalize pornography in America.
It wasn't the Muslims. In fact, Muslims are very strict against pornography in the Middle East. They're also very strict against abortion. That's another big Christian issue from last I checked, right? They're also very strong against most of the Christian churches in America. Worked very hard. They were in favor of prohibition. Actually, they realized the destruction of alcohol was of people. I don't know. I really think if people want to have a drink, they can have a drink. But there's no question that Christians were certainly opposed to the exploitation and the use of alcohol to destroy people. And Jews have always been the biggest practitioners of alcohol. Jews have been the biggest promoters of pornography in the world. They brag about it. Just read a Jewish professor by the name of Nathan Edwards in the Jewish Quarterly, the Jewish Intellectual Quarterly, in which he talks about the Jews who run pornography world over and how these are all Jews. I mean, the leaders are all Jews. And he said, what's their motivation? Is it just because of the fact they can make a lot of money through it? Yeah, they can make a lot of money through the defilement of our young children and defilement of young women and young men with porn and disgusting things of that nature. But he asked the question, you know, what is their motivation? And they talk about how these porn kings and all that talk about how much they hate Gentiles and how much they hate Christians. And in fact, he asked them the question and they literally, he quotes them as saying that they are, in fact, he says, quote, they openly say that they are motivated by an atavistic hatred against WASPs, and not just WASPs, because it's not just Protestants, but against Christians and against Europeans, because how European peoples were anti-Semitic. In fact, like Christians, if you read what Jews say about Christianity, it tells you that Christianity is so evil because it persecuted Jews. But the truth is, like everything else in life, they've been the genociders. They've been the persecutors. Jews ran communism, killed tens of millions. They created the Ukraine war, killing 500,000 Ukrainians for no purpose whatsoever. They're doing the absolute mass murder of Palestinian children.
Dave, what about the porn? He asked about the pornography.
So the pornography.
It's the Muslims, right?
Yeah, right. No, yeah. He's a Jewish scholar, and he writes and he points out, and he documents the fact that they're motivated by an atavistic hatred of Christians and the European people, and they enjoy seeing us defiled. When they see a young Christian girl or man defiled and reduced and degraded in pornography or in sex trafficking and all that, they've also been the biggest sex traffickers in the world. They've also been the biggest enslavers in the world. Well, the same Jews that run the media to make white people hate themselves because of the slave trade, they don't mention the fact that the Jews historically ran the slave trade and brag about it. Jewish historians like Jacob Marcus, for instance, wrote the article on Jews for the Encyclopedia Britannica, with the leading encyclopedia world. It used to be the leading. Now it's Wikipedia, which is run by an open Jew, which defiles anyone, you, me, anybody else, that stands up and exposes the Jewish role against Christianity, the Jewish role against European mankind, the Jewish role against our freedoms as Americans. So this is the reality. And he quotes the Jews as saying that they're motivated by atavistic hatred against Christians. And they're actually, this is why they're trying to do pornography as a way to weaken us and a way to destroy us. Now, I've got a good example of that. I'll take one more sentence.
I'm sorry, but I really wanted to know how the Jewish establishment legalized porn in America. I wanted to know there.
Hurting us and getting into positions of power and influence in our judiciary system, just like the head of the Judiciary Committee, for instance, during the Trump years, who tried to impeach him, was Nadler. And also the head of intelligence was Jacob Schiff. And that's how they did this. And a perfect example, not only can we show the Jewish dictatorship over America. Now, obviously, the man that called is a very Christian man. He certainly opposed to Islam because he's a Christian. But we got to look at this really, really frankly now. And he's got to start addressing this and thinking about this himself. Okay. So the reason, all right, what they did was in 1979 was a very important year. It was 200 years since the founding of our American Constitution in 1779, right? And for 200 years, it was legal to put up a nativity scene to recognize our Jewish heritage, our Jewish Christian faith for the vast majority of Americans. They could put up a nativity scene at Christmas. They could put up a little Easter celebration for Jesus Christ. You could sing a Christmas carol in school. You could put crosses on top of mountains. And that wasn't a violation of the Constitution, church and state, correct? So what they did was they infiltrated our legal system. They infiltrated our courts. They infiltrated our media. And they did basically a new law by the Supreme Court in 1979, 200 years after the founding of the Constitution, where they made any Christian symbols on public land, whether it be a city hall or a county seat or a state government position or a federal government position, made it against the law, even at Christmas, to put up a Christian symbol like a cross, a nativity scene. That same Supreme Court decision, on the basis that this was a violation of freedom of religion because Christian symbols could be put up for Christmas, the same law specifically said that the oldest symbol of Antichrist Judaism, the menorah, and by the way, the menorah is the oldest symbol of Judaism. It's not the Star of David. And you can look at any dictionary, you can look at any encyclopedia, Jewish encyclopedia, and you'll see that the oldest symbol of Judaism has always been the candlestick, the menorah. And in that same decision, it says Jewish symbols, they can be put up on public land. But Christian symbols of 90% of the population.
Dave, we got to get to the next call. I know, but you answered about the pornography, so we got a full room. I got to get to the next call.
It's great. All right. To put this in a context.
I know it is. Thanks, Robert. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Context of everything.
I know, but we're under pressure here because of the call. Believe me. No, I'm under pressure. All right. Goose, go ahead, buddy. Goose, go ahead.
Oh, there's Goose. Okay, let's go. There's the wolf.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Me and Goose are going to get together this week coming up.
Sounds good. Yeah, hopefully. That sounds good, man. I'll hit you. Man, I got to get your email somehow.
I sent it to you in that chat. Okay, like about an hour ago.
Oh, shit. Okay, I'll check it.
You have to come on over to Louisiana one of these days, too.
All right. Is it published, Dave, if I can't get it in the chat or no?
What do you mean? Just scroll up. I said, Goose, email me.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, cool. For the older gentlemen, see, this is the problem we're having with a lot of these older Christian gentlemen.
Well, he's not old. I mean, a lot of older people have it. I mean, I'm as old as he is probably, but
I get it, Dave. There's like a handful of you guys
that don't understand this. Older people.
I'm not trying to put down the older people, Dave, but they've had 50 years of this Jewish indoctrination.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's be honest about
it. It's not their fault either.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be honest about it. I mean, I can count on my hand, on two hands, how many guys that are 60, 70 years old that are truly based on the Jews in Israel.
Yeah.
And you're one of them. And Dave's one of them. And Giovanni's one of them. And there's like not even like one hand I can count how many 70-year-olds are really based, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true.
I understand what you're saying, but I always hear about the boomers. You know, I think we better reach out to the boomers. And I think a lot of boomers, by the way, and they didn't even realize it themselves. But if you're 67 years old and you were likely back in, say, church in 1965 or 1975, you were not getting the story that the Jews are the chosen people. In fact, even in the Baptist church, which has changed a lot now, you had Billy Graham. And I went to a number of his evangelical meetings, like when they filled up Tulane Stadium in New Orleans when I was in junior high school. And in there, they said it real clearly. And the clear message is that Christ brought a new covenant. And what Christ said to us was that it was a new covenant for those that believed in him. And the only way to God and the only way to be one of God's children truly work for God was to embrace Jesus Christ and the salvation of Christ. And Jews didn't do that. In fact, not only did they not do it, the Jews crucified Christ. They celebrate murdering Christ. They themselves claim they murdered Christ in the town. Well, I'm not making this up. And for the gentleman who's listening, probably still to the show, please go look. Read. You can get copies of the Talmud. You can read it. You can look it up. You can check it out. They curse Christians. They pass Christian cemeteries, and they curse the mothers of the dead. They spit three times when they see a Christian cross. In Israel, they don't even use a plus sign in mathematics because it too much resembles the cross they hate so much of Jesus Christ. Now, this is what Jewish power really represents.
Yeah, recently, Dave, in a debate between Gavin McGinnis, Nick Fuentes, the Jew Adam King, and the other guy, Vince from Red Elephants, Adam King, the Talmudic Jew, openly admitted on air that he would much rather have Muslims come in and get rid of Christianity altogether, and they all feel that way.
Exactly. Well, they also say, and I can show you Jewish scholars, leading Jewish scholars, and this is accepted. You can go to major Jewish websites and look it up. You know, just think of yourself as a Jew and just go to their websites and say, how are Jews supposed to feel about who's really our enemy? Is it Muslims or Christians? And you know what they say? No question about the fact that Christianity was the biggest enemy of the Jews and that they got along with the Muslims. Okay. They lived in conjunction with the Muslims without a problem. They really didn't like the Christians. And I think the reason why they didn't like the Christians, because the Christians were not, you know, they were not going to accept this Jewish perfidy. Because Judaism itself has a very unique and distinguished hatred of Jesus Christ. While Islam actually creates Jesus Christ and promotes Jesus Christ as the greatest single prophet of God. Now, that's exactly the opposite of what Judaism does. So Judaism diverged even more. Once Christ came, they opposed Christ. They crucified Christ. They hated Christ. In fact, that's why they crucified him. He went into the temple and drove them out with kind of nine tails. As moneylenders and usurers of the people and robbers and defilers of the temple, they hated Jesus Christ.
100%. And not to mention that, Dave, real quick, but let me get some dialogue with you. I want to shake these boomers. I'm not knocking all of them. You guys are based. I love you guys. It's great. But like, I want to shake them and be like, where do you think this 22% credit card interest comes from? Where do you think your 10% mortgage interest comes from? Wake up, pal.
The debt system that Jews have exploited, you know, forever. And by the way, usury, you know, has a bad name. And people think of usury as simple interest, but it's not. There's certainly a place where somebody can get a little bit of interest by giving people their money and risking their money in some sort of endeavor. There's no argument with that. But what usury is, and what Jews have practiced since time immemorial, back to biblical times, was not simply a certain small amount of reasonable amount of interest. It was loan sharking. It was in connection with Jewish organized crime. The great Martin Luther, I don't know whether the gentleman calling was a Catholic, whether he's a Catholic or a Protestant, I don't care. As long as you're a Christian, you worship Jesus Christ, you support the salvation of Jesus Christ, you support, you know, the laws of God, fine, right? But there's no argument about the fact, there's not even a simple argument about the fact that Jews have involved themselves in every kind of financial criminal behavior. In fact, organized crime. The great Martin Luther, who gave us the Protestant, you know, divisions, the Protestant denominations of what became Christianity. He was the guy that really stood out. And by the way, he was fundamentally a Catholic. He believed in Jesus Christ. You know, he had differences with the church. He wanted the church, the Christian pastors and priests, you know, to marry. He thought that was natural. I would agree with him on that, even from the scriptures. There was nothing wrong with priests marrying. There's, in fact, I think that's a much more healthier thing. I think it's natural for a man to get married. I think it's a good thing if a Christian has a family. I think it helps the propagation of the church. I think it's good for having these intelligent and good people to have children and lots of children. I think it's healthy and good. But Martin Luther wrote whole books about the fact that Jews were running all kinds of criminal schemes. They were dealing with stolen goods. They were even promoting drugs and alcohol back then. They were promoting prostitution. They were doing all these evil things, and including loan sharking. There's always been loan sharking. And loan sharking is basically a crime today in almost every city, almost every country of the world, is where somebody loans money. The interest rates are exorbitant. And once people get tied down to the interest rate, it's like being addicted. It's like, you know, they destroy you. They destroy you and destroy your life, and they get their claws into you. It's the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is what Jews were involved in. And even the great Martin Luther.
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
Martin Luther King. Yeah.
Dave, real quick. How many Iranians and Saudis have bombed our ship and dropped napalm on our soldiers?
Not many, none. But you know, it's like this.
All right, let's move to the next call. We'll get you back in, Goose.
The people in Iraq did not invade America. We did that, and we killed 500,000 Iraki.
But it was worth it, Dave. It was worth it.
Albright himself on 60 Minutes said we killed 500,000 children, and it was worth it.
Right?
No,
we got it. We got people.
No,
we got people banging on the door to get in. Okay, any of you guys in here?
Jews are doing right now in Palestine, and that they're look those children, 800,000 Christians, ran out of Iraq because we went against Saddam Hussein, and Saddam, he actually supported Christianity and protected Christianity the same way that Syria's becoming enemies are. That he's always supported the Orthodox Christians and the Christians in Syria. We supported the Jews wanted to destroy the Christians, the 4 million Christians in Syria. If this is what Tucker was talking about the other night on his show, go watch the interview with the Palestinian Christian who talks about the fact that how the Jews have actually destroyed and murdered our fellow Christians in Palestine. You've got to understand that. And any Christian who doesn't understand that, my God, it's like Christ said in John 8, you know,
yeah.
If you don't know the truth, you will never be free.
Right. Wake up, boomers. Okay. We've got obscure Austrian painter. My guess is Richard from the UK.
Hello. Congratulations. Well done, yes. Dave.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you guys probably understand the joke within my current present avatar, but I wanted to draw attention to the fact that quite a lot of Jews now, I've noticed specifically in the media and also amongst believers as well, that there's the red heifers, either, I think, tomorrow or next, the day after tomorrow. So when would that be? I'm guessing Tuesday. I wanted to know what you guys thought about it, what you felt the Kabbalistic significance of it is, and whether American taxpayers should be more aware of this, because I think they're presently building the Third Temple according to this kind of report. But,
well, thank you. I'm glad you brought this up, because even though this is like an obscure thing, it's not an obscure thing to these radical Jews. It's not an obscure thing to Judaism. It's not an obscure thing to these Jews who actually do have visions or ideals that they're going to take over the world. And again, it just shows you how deluded and how lied to and how perverted that Christians have become. Of course, the New Testament warns us against that. In fact, the New Testament says the Antichrist will come and he'll pretend like he's a, you know, he's a honest and a God-worshipping guy, but he's the Antichrist. And he's going to kill billions and billions of people. And we're talking about just as kill people. But we're talking about mass pedophilia, rape, murder, sodomy of children, the same kind of things that the Bible talks about in Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, they talk about the Antichrist coming to power. And this is how, when you have the power to control the narrative and to control what people see, including in our churches, and you can bribe some of these Christians off, that you can actually support the Antichrist, a man who wants to kill millions of Christians, wants to enslave the world, wants to kill and rape millions of little girls and little boys. And by the way, I don't think Jesus Christ supports that. I think, obviously, Jesus does not need the Antichrist to come back to the world. The prophecy about that, I think, in the New Testament Revelation, and by the way, they talk about the synagogue of Satan, by the way. The prophecy about that is really a warning to us that this is what's going to happen unless we win and have the grace of God. And the way we can avoid that as Christians is to believe in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and beseech him, and he will protect our families. He will protect the innocent of humanity. You're not supporting Jesus Christ by supporting the rise of the Antichrist, because you say you need this trick. You need the Antichrist to come to power and kill millions of innocent children, which Jesus Christ didn't say kill children. And there is no genocides at all in the New Testament. The only genocides in the New Testament were Christians, by Jews, by the way, that relatively wiped out Christians. Just read Thessalonians. And the Jews killed our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and the prophets, and despise all men, and prevent us and keep us from teaching the Gentiles, preaching to the Gentiles, right? And it goes on to say, have driven us out. Boy, they're driving us out of our own European countries. They're really driving us out of America. How many people have left America and some other parts of the world because they're saying there's no more future for white kids in this country anymore? I mean, think about it, folks. You know, this is all through the New Testament. But the idea, and it's such a sick, disgusting idea, that somehow Jesus Christ can't come back to earth and save us with the second coming unless the Antichrist comes first and kills almost all of humanity. I don't think Jesus is going to sit by and allow the Antichrist to do that unless we abandon Jesus Christ. And you don't support Jesus Christ by supporting the rise of the Antichrist. And if the Antichrist is said, which Revelation makes it pretty clear, is going to sit into the rebuilt temple, that's where the Antichrist will rule from in the world and kill billions of people. If you actually have the stupidity and the insanity, if you're so sick as to believe that that's what we should support, the Antichrist, the anti-Christian, mass murdering Jews to rule the world like they did in communism. If you think that's what Jesus wants and God's want, I have pity on you. God, save your soul, because you're doing the work of the devil. Christ said it so well. It's in John 8:44. Ye, and this is the Pharisees, the same Jewish elite that rule us right now today, really, who control Israel, who control the media, who control the international banks, and who are controlling this world and leading us to these wars. He said, quote, ye and ye father are the sons of the devil. The lusts of ye father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. All you got to do is open your Wikipedia page. All you got to do is turn on Google. All you can do is do a search engine on any major figure, and you'll find anybody that defends Christianity and defends Europeans from the hate of these Jews or any other people from Jewish hegemony over them. They're going to be presented as the evil ones. It says also in the New Testament again and again, and no one spake of him, Jesus Christ, for fear of the Jews. Anybody who can't understand that the Jews as a group, I'm not saying every Jew, the Jews as a group are an enemy of Jesus Christ and God. And anybody who would support the rise of the Antichrist and the idea that they're saying is that these, of course, these Jews are really crazy. They're totally nuts. All right. They're insane. And they see, they're also like, they're like voodoo people. They somehow they've got to do these sadistic, these kind of satanic rituals. Like they got to slaughter a red heifer. And then they slaughter the red heifer that's unblemished, then that's going to pave the way for the Messiah. Now, who's the Messiah? The Messiah is the Antichrist. And Jewish Noahide laws, which are proclaimed by the
perfect. Jews. Perfect. Dave, got to take the top of the hour break. Yeah. Top of the hour break. Hold on. Hold on.
Nobody can
hold on a second there, boys. Oh, God. All right. It's the top of the hour. Everybody's muted. Except me. That's the way it should be. I can't hear you, Dave. It's 7 seconds till 7 o'clock Central Time. You're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. You hear me, punk? Hey, man, I got to know. Remember that Clint Eastwood movie? God, that was great.
Muted me?
Dirty Harry? Dave, remember that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Dave, I would humbly beseech my brother, that you can certainly mute anybody in this show except your co-host, me. I would never mute you. We can argue. We can debate. We can do that. But let's not mute each other, because that's one thing that I would request humbly from you. And it's a good thing that we have a little tete-a-tete. It makes the show interesting. I don't argue that at all. But please don't ever mute me. And I think what we're saying here, and the stuff we're talking about here, it is done passionately, and that's one of the things exciting about this show. And people have actually liked.
All right.
They like to come to the show is because I can let my hair down and just let it all out.
All right. Okay. If you can guess who this is, from what movie, I will not mute you.
I'm not going to take that.
Today.
I don't have to know.
You ready?
The answer to that is not to be muted.
No, here it is.
I insist that I don't get muted, period.
Yeah, well, you can insist all you want, but I got the mute button. Here it is. Ready?
I can also have the ability to go anytime I want.
Yeah, you could. Of course you could.
Okay, so
you have free will.
Well, then let's
right?
do something that's muted.
Okay, here's the line. Ready?
Yeah, I
got it. You believe in Jesus? Yeah, I do. Well, you're going to meet him. Anybody?
That's obviously Clint Eastwood.
No, it's not Clint Eastwood.
That's somebody else?
Clint Eastwood is...
Is this the guy that did the...
I know what you're thinking.
Not Terminator, the movies with the other guy.
No. Eastwood is... Did he fire 6 shots or only 5?
I got you.
Well, to tell you the truth, in all this confusion, I kind of lost count myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. That's Eastwood. This one, you believe in Jesus. And the guy's wearing a cross. He's like, yeah, I do. Well, you're going to meet him. That's Charles Bronson. Oh, Death yeah. Wish. Right. Yes.
Charles Bronson. I just couldn't get his name handy.
Yeah. Right. Okay, back to the Red Heifer.
So the Red Heifer is this weird Jewish voodoo satanic crap, right? Where you got to go through these rituals and so forth. And I would always suggest to people to understand Jesus made all this really clear. And it's in John and it's in the other gospels. And Jesus said it very, very clearly. And he said, in fact, there was one of the most famous sayings of Jesus was, he said, you know, and while these Jews were all concerned about the temple, the temporal aspects of life, oh, we got this temple and that makes us holy and all that. And Jesus said, he said, listen, temple doesn't make any difference. He said, truth is, I could tear the temple down in a minute, you know, and I could build it all back. In fact, I could build it all back in 3 days. Well, people didn't quite understand what Jesus was talking about when he first said that in the Gospels. And then later, the Gospels talk about what they realized Jesus meant. And what he meant was, and he said this many times in the New Testament, he said, understand something, folks. The temple, the so-called physical temple that where the Jews worship, that means nothing. He says, my body, my life, me, Jesus Christ, I'm your temple. And in my body is your temple. This is, in fact, he even says this kind of thing, makes this kind of reference in the Holy Communion. You know, this is my body. This is my blood. And it makes very clear. So he was obviously crucified. He rose in the 3rd day. And that's what he was saying when he talked to these Jews, because the temple, this is just your Jewish hubris. This is just your Jewish supremacy. Jesus said it clearly. I came to everyone who will believe. The Bible, the New Testament says it clearly. I come for the children of the promise, not children by descendancy. It's not what your descent is. It's whether or not you believe in Jesus Christ. Jews did not accept Christ. They hated Christ. Judaism institutionalized hatred against Christ, the Antichrist. In fact, the New Testament also talks about how do you know who the Antichrist is? They knew, the early Christians knew, that the Antichrist was a lot more than just that singular top Antichrist, you know, dictator that was going to rule the world and kill people, or that was warned about by prophecy. But they said that the Antichrist, you know the Antichrist, he's the one, it says in the New Testament, and it says this a few places, he's the one who says he's of the Father, but not of the Son. And that's exactly what the Jews were then. He kept saying, well, where are the
Father? All right, we got to go to the next call, Dave.
And that's how the New Testament says to understand the Antichrist is. You got to realize in the history of Christianity, who was the biggest enemy of Christianity? Who killed more Christians? Who did more massacres of Christians? Who did more persecutions and Christians and crucifixions of Christians, as well as promoting the crucifixion of Christ? Nobody did more than that than the Jews. And Jews understand that, just like in
all right, Dave, we got to get to the next call. All right, Richard, we'll get you back in, buddy. Okay, bye. Okay, Jimmy, no, Bronson was not a Jew. I think his name was Charles Baczynski, Polish. Came from a huge family. Yeah, and you could tell by looking at him, he's not a Jew.
Yeah, I thought it was a Russian, but anyway, I'm glad to be corrected on that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because that would suck.
Hey, yeah, after watching, Dr. Duke, and after this week, watching what happened just yesterday with the government, you know,
how many millions of dollars?
Yeah, well,
it's Ukraine, which is just going to kill more Ukrainian young white men, white Christians.
Yeah.
$26 billion to Israel. Like, we haven't given these bastards enough, right? $26 billion, and then $8 billion to Taiwan, which is just making Taiwan and China to want to go to war against us. Taiwan is part of its country. Could you imagine somebody coming in and saying, say that there was a movement, let's say of Mexicans in whatever, Arizona or New Mexico, that said, we're going to take over New Mexico and we're going to have a war with you. And we want to, and suddenly there was China or anybody else would send them weapons, give them money for bombs and planes and, you know, jets and fighters and everything to go against the United States of America as part of America. That's exactly what we're doing with Taiwan. America has recognized from the very beginning that Taiwan is part of China. And by the way, yeah, the Chinese are still quote unquote communists, but they are far, far cry from anything of Mao. They believe in private property, right? They have certainly allowed Christianity to come back to their country. They, you know, and they, by the way, they're not putting military bases on our doorstep. They do want to trade us. They do want to trade, have trade with us. They want to have business with us. They want to be successful. They want to sell their products, and they want to buy some of our products. They do all that. But as far as being vocally and ferociously our enemy, they're really not. In fact, the way Dr. Slattery puts it pretty well, he does it very comically, but he says, I'd a lot rather be ruled by chinks than I would by Jews. And that's true. That sounds... The Jews have an old, as a joke, of course, he likes the Chinese. He's not criticizing. It's a way of making a joke. But he likes the Chinese and he likes the Japanese. He respects the Asian people. And you look at China. China has not been an overly aggressive country against other countries. They wanted to control China. They certainly had times of expansion and empire before. So if we've been far more expansive than whatever China was. Genghis Khan, you might say he was Chinese, but he really wasn't Chinese in terms of their ideology or their, you know, their people were concerned. And then you can look at the different peoples and the kingdoms of the world. Attila the Hun, for God's sakes. So many others. Look at the Ottomans. So there's always been empires. The Aztecs, you know, conquered other tribes. So, I mean, the Chinese actually, compared to most people, they'll conquer. They're happy to get their power and strength through trade and producing products, pretty good products, by the way, at a good price. They're more than happy to use the principles of trade to become more powerful. But as far as trying to rule over us, it's us that have bases all around China. It's us that try to cause dissent and even civil war in their own country with Taiwan and China. It's you know, everything is totally hypocritical, and it's all about one thing. The Jews who rule over us and who rule over our government and are using the governments of America and the EU to destroy the people of our own countries, they also don't want any challenge from Russia or from China or any other nations in the world. They want to be the total controllers of the world, and that's part of their vision for what they want for the world. That's the reality of life in this world, and that's why we have these anti-China policies. Again, I believe in protecting American business, protecting American industry and trade. And it was the Jews that sold us out. And the Jewish bankers made billions and billions of dollars by selling out American businessmen. And they also, the Jews also knew that the way they were going to take over America was weaken the American middle class. And weaken small American business and homegrown business and business.
All right, Dave, hold on. Jimmy, what was your question, Jimmy? Because we got to get the next call.
That's great. Thanks, Dave. Hey, listen.
That's it?
No.
Okay.
I do have a good question. You know, like Kennedy, the guy that you ran against in Louisiana, and all of them up there that are voting for all this stuff, you know, do you think that these people know anything about Jews? I mean, they're supposed to be smart, our leaders. And, you know,
I think some of them might know, but the ones that do know are just as prone to vote with them you know, rather than against them, because they know the power they have.
So yeah, $1 million gets put up to.
Well, they know exactly that if they would dare to come out and say, what in the hell are we giving $26 billion to Israel? That would build us the prettiest, biggest wall we ever had. Israel's got big walls. We paid for that big wall Israel has. But yeah. We don't want a wall to protect America.
Look, well, these leaders are no good to anybody.
They know that if they did this, that they would be, the media would come out and attack them, try to undermine them, destroy them. They try to find something they could prosecute them on, taxes or whatever. They know Jewish power. So I there's no way to excuse that. I decided a long time ago in my life. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I knew there was two routes you could say. A lot of people, I heard Finkelstein say this, right? The Jewish scholar I like very much, who talks about Jewish supremacy and the danger of Jewish supremacism to the world, Norman Finkelstein. And Finkelstein said as a kid, you know, he said that here's the things that people want. People have to make a choice, right? That people want to be wealthy. They want fame. Or another thing you might want to do in your life, you might want to pursue truth and justice. And he said that he made a choice in his life between, you know, wealth and fame and truth and justice. And often that these ideas are counterposed to each other. And I think that most politicians, because of the nature of what they're doing, because basically most politicians are running to become powerful, to become the boss, to become influential, to win fame and accolades from the masses and all those other things. And a lot of these people, long, long ago, the way the system is constructed, that it works for people who want wealth and fame, and they will be rewarded by wealth and fame and accolades. By standing not for the truth, not for justice, but for the powers that be. I decided a long time ago in my life that when I looked at the screen and the war heroes of America, and you'd see the presentation of Americans and people fighting and dying for their country and so forth, I wanted to be someone who wasn't in it for wealth, wasn't in it for fame, but I was in it for truth. And justice. And I've always made that standard. Thomas Jefferson, probably the American, historically, the American patriot I most admire, said it so well. He said, there is no truth under heaven. There's no truth that I fear. Wherever the truth lies on any subject, I want to be truthful. I want to know the truth. Without knowing the truth, and he didn't say these are things that I guess I will say, I will create in the mind that God gave me. But I think without truth, I think you know nothing. I think without truth, you don't even know who you are. And you have no sense of justice, no sense of humanity. And I think all of us know this, that we want to be just to our children. We would never want to punish them unjustly for something they didn't do. We never bear false witness against them. We never try to hurt them or torture them or corrupt them in any way. Most parents want their children to grow up, and they want their children to grow up and honor truth. And we used to honor truth as much as anything. When I was a kid, we used to be taught. I was taught by my parents. My father was a full colonel in the military. He was also an engineer. He was a self-made man in so many ways. Honest man, Sunday school teacher. And he was like, he always stressed to me truth. And he would consider, like most parents did, now I'll just ask you about your experience in your life. If you made a lie up to your parents and you told them you were doing something else, you would get more in trouble for the lie than you would for going to your friend's house. But lying about it or telling your friends, because that's how much, you know, truth is admired and honored by Western mankind and the values of Western Christian civilization. So That's what I grew up believing in. And I chose truth and justice as a young man. And I've tried to stick to that principle. And I have stuck to that principle.
All right. We got to get to the next call. Thanks, Jimmy. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Okay, thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks.
Okay, let's get to
Vinny.
That was an
interesting departure from our usual subjects. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, cool. Vinny from Indiana. Shoot.
Hi, David. Hey, and Dave. Hey, real quick, you mentioned Charles Bronson. Charles Bronson was a Polish Lithuanian who traced his ancestry to the Tartars who, you know, invaded, you know, all the way to Poland under Genghis Khan and then stayed behind and then hooked up with the Poles. Part of the Polish Lithuanian Empire. You mentioned the
because that's the difference between somebody like Charles Bronson and these Jews, because Jews are just loyal to Jews, and even though someone might be part, you know, obviously Bronson wasn't just Tartar, he wasn't just, you know, Asian, he wasn't part of the Golden Horde. He identified with his ancestry as well, who were Poles, who were European Christians, and he became actually, I think, a force of good and justice in the world. I mean, he actually believed that, you know, that we had to find some justice, that when these bad guys would do terrible things, rape and murder and assault, that they had to pay for it. Now, we also believe in the system of law. And I think that in a good society, that you have to have a good system of laws. But his argument was that when the law breaks down and justice is not served, that sometimes, you know, a strong man has to take it into his own hands. I mean, that was his idea about that. But the point is that he was still dedicated to fighting for justice and fighting for a world in which an innocent person, a woman, would not be raped or robbed or hurt or oppressed in any way, and that people had a right to justice, not just the sense of being a victim of somebody who was stronger, but somebody who was strong or people who were strong had to defend those who were weak. And I believe that's true even today. And that means, it doesn't mean that we should be a vigilante justice, but what it means is that people who are strong have an absolute duty to use their strength to defend the innocent, to defend the victim, and to help administer whatever justice we can in this world.
Yeah. You mentioned Do Ya Punk. That's from Dirty Harry. That movie was made by David Duke's favorite director of one of David Duke's favorite film, Invasion of the Body Snatcher. That was Don Siegel, and the line was written by John Milius, who was half Catholic, half Jewish, and he went on to make Conan the Barbarian, Red Dawn, all sorts of the Rough Riders, a lot of the TV series Rome. He was famous for the line, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning," from Apocalypse Now. It's, you know, he was a very interesting guy. And Don Siegel and Milius were two guys who, yeah, one was Jewish and the other one was part Jewish, but they were very critical of left wing Hollywood. They were interesting characters.
Yeah, there's always a nuance in all these things, and there's always, you know, issues behind the scenes. And see, one thing that I didn't understand as a young man, let's put it this way. When I grew up, you know, my father was, like I said, a full colonel. He loved Patton. He brought the order to Eisenhower to go to Europe, actually, when he was on maneuvers in Louisiana. He was the guy that brought Eisenhower's orders to pack up and get ready to go to Europe. He also, supported Patton. And we used to talk about this, and he used to say to me, because I was very anti-communist, grew up anti-communist, and I still am anti-communist, but he used to say to me, he said, you know, we should have gone on to Moscow. We should have freed the people of Europe from these communist murderers. And I endorsed that position because I knew that communism had killed so many people. As I got older, I began to realize that there was something that a number of Jews knew on the inside. Even a lot of Jews were still kind of clinging to this image of communism because they saw communism as their experiment, as their system by which they were going to control the world. Zionism later supplanted communism. But there's no question in my mind that starting in the late 40s, early 50s, Jews saw the handwriting on the wall. The Soviet Union was starting to change. Jews were losing positions of power and influence. They were, a lot of the crimes against, of the communists against the Christians were being exposed. And there was a change going on. And Jews saw, once they saw Jews were losing control of the Soviet Union, they got the idea that the Soviet Union was, you know, was going to be taken back over by the Russians. And the Russians were traditional enemies of the Jew. And if there was an ethnic, kind of an ethnic civil war raging in Russia between the Jews and the Russian people. And they saw the Russian people rising up. And they were, in fact, rising up. And ultimately, they did overthrow communism. And that's all true. And Jews recognized this. So even long before communism was overthrown, ultimately the Russian people did overthrow communism. They took down the hammer and sickle. And on their own volition, they freed all of Eastern Europe. They freed Lithuania. They freed Latvia. They freed Estonia. They freed all these areas. They freed Poland. They freed Romania. They freed all these countries. And they removed their troops. They removed their guns. They tried to work with the West, even though they had to know some of the Jews had a lot of power in the West. They worked with the West and said, look, let's not be pointing nuclear missiles at each other. It's a danger to humanity. Let's have peace. Let's have disarmament. Let me finish. This is an important point. And I'm sorry if I'm going a little bit over the time, but it's an important point once in a while to do that in this show. But here's the idea, okay? They said, we don't want war with you. We're not communists. We believe in private property. We're going to reinstate the Christian church. And this was like, you know, it was like a cross before, you know, a crucifix for a vampire, you know. They started shifting. And I believe that's why we got in Vietnam and why we had so much of the Cold War, because they knew that the Russians, Jewish power, powerful people. And so at that point, Russia became an enemy. And Vietnam didn't like China because they were afraid of China. It was sitting on their border, and China's always wanted to control.
Dave, we got to get moving. Go ahead, Vinny.
I realize that, but that's an important point.
I just want to say,
I'm saying that maybe these Jews that were giving us the anti-communist position at that time knew that communism was in a process of change, and they were afraid of the Russians rising again against them. What do you think about that?
Is that interesting? I just want to say one thing. E. Michael Jones, his Friday Cozy TV show, he had a thing on Jewish lawfare. He had clips from Alan Dershowitz, and Alan Dershowitz is saying that the Jews are going to completely take off the gloves, and anyone who opposes Zionism or Israel, they're going to use unrestricted, unrestricted submarine warfare. They're going to do unrestricted Jewish lawfare warfare. And it was absolutely chilling. And, the things that happened this week in Congress where they basically renewed the FISA warrant and at the same time pretty much stripped the Fourth Amendment. It's absolutely chilling. If you see that clip, you can go to the E. Michael Jones channel. On Good Shoot. It's really horrifying.
Well, thank you for the suggestion.
Thanks, Vinny. Maybe you can drop that clip in the chat.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, buddy. All right, Dave, I'm going to read something real quick before we get to the next calls.
Sure.
This is pretty cool. Charles Bronson, right? Listen to this. I'll read fast. Bronson was born in 1921 in Ehrenfeld, it sounds like a Jew name, Pennsylvania, a coal mining region. I'm not going to read the rest of that. He was the 11th of 15 children, born into a Roman Catholic family of Lithuanian heritage. His father, mother, both Lithuanian. Bronson did not speak any English at home during his childhood in Pennsylvania, like many children he grew up with. He once recounted that even as a soldier, his accent was strong enough to make his comrades think he was a foreigner. Besides English, he could speak Lithuanian, Russian, and Greek. In a 1973 interview, Bronson remarked that He did not know his father very well and was not sure if he loved or hated him. He added that all he could remember about him was that whenever his mother announced his father was coming home, the children would hide. In 1933, so then he's 12, the father died and he went to work in the coal mines, first in the mining office and then in the mine. He later said he earned $1 for each ton of coal that he mined. The family suffered extreme poverty during the Great Depression, and Bronson recalled going hungry many times. Wow. His mother could not afford milk for his young sister, so she was fed warm tea instead. His family was so poor that he once had to wear his sister's dress to school for lack of clothing, and he was the first member of his family to graduate high school. He worked in the mines until enlisting in the U.S. Army Air Forces in 1943 during World War II. He served in the 760th Flexible Gunnery Training Squadron, and in 1945 as a Boeing 29 Super Fortress aerial gunner with the Guam-based 61st Bombardment Squadron within the 39th Bombardment Group.
So what you're saying
is... Which conducted combat missions against the Japanese home islands. He flew 25 missions and received a Purple Heart for wounds received in battle.
Right. Well, you know, so what you're saying there, when I get out of that, I know a little bit about Bronson, and you, what you're really saying there is that when he could play these roles of a tough guy, he knew what toughness was.
Yes, that's right.
In fact, I understand he was a fighter too as well in his early days. He competed sometimes in actual, you know, physical fisticuffs and so forth.
Yes.
So he was a fighter. Now, you know who reminds me about that is, and we can diverge a second. You've diverged a few minutes. Let me diverge a few minutes with a little story, which I think...
All right, before you do that, Dave, I just want to say this real quick.
Yeah.
About Ehrenfeld, where he was born in Pennsylvania, right? Yeah. Listen to this. You'll get a kick out of this, right? Mm-hmm. It's tiny. Has a total area of 0.44 square miles, right? Mm-hmm. And 0.43 of those 0.44 are land and 0.01 is water. So about 3% is water. As of 2021, and he's the only notable person born and raised there. Yeah. As of 2021, there were 184, they don't have to say people, but people in the borough of Ehrenfeld.
Yeah.
The racial makeup of the borough was 100.00% white. How about that? Let's go! All right, go ahead.
Okay, so I wanted to mention something to you. I have a lot of connection with music my whole life. I've always been inspired by it. I look for songs that inspire me or just, in fact, touch me in a certain way. And one of the songs that I really enjoyed as a kid, and this made me think of this song, was a song by the great Tennessee Ernie Ford. You remember who he is? You're old enough.
I know the name. I just
really deep voice. And he did his most famous song was 16 Tons. And it was about a coal miner. And I know the words of the song. I know the words of the song my whole life. I can give them to you by heart. Let me give you the words of the song. I'm not going to sing it for you, but
can you sing? Just sing it. You got a good voice, Dave.
No, I can't do that. Anyway, the song goes like this. Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. In fact, that's most working people, I guess. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and a deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal. And the straw boss said, well, bless my soul. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. He goes on, I was born one morning. It was drizzling rain. Fighting and Trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't no high-toned woman make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older, deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. And the last two lines are pretty interesting, too. He said, if you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't. A lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other is steel. If the right one don't get you, the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. And Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I love that song, and it's like it's really a strong. It's a song really about the kind of men with the strength that made America, and really have been the core of what we call, you know, the white middle class and the white working class in America. And there's an honesty to the song, and strength to the song, and a will to the strong of the song that just gives. Gives me a lot of inspiration. And if you ever want to hear a song like that, you could just, if you have Alexa or you have Google or whatever, just ask it to sing, you know, Tennessee Ernie Ford, 16 tons. And it's.
Yeah. I'm going to download it and insert. We're going to play it.
Yeah. Go ahead and play it.
Yeah. But you're right. That's what, right now look at these assholes today with their nose rings and blue hair and tattoos, and they want everything for free. The people who built this country, whether they were white or black, because all races, or Oriental or whatever, all races worked hard. And like you said, 16 tons. That guy got paid $1 per ton.
You know, do you know the story of, I put my history hat on. That's why I'm a history professor today, because I love history so much. But years ago, I read about this and said this. Eponymous 16 tons.
Eponymous?
Yeah. Well, I don't even know how it's pronounced.
It's eponymous.
Eponymous. Okay, well, there you go. Whatever it is, because I'm just thinking about reading. I think I've never actually heard it said. I've read it. Anyway, it refers to a practice they used to have of getting new miners back in the mines in the mid-1920s, right? So, back then, in the 1920s, a miner basically was expected to do about 10 tons a day. But when new miners came, and to show you the sense of community they had, the sense of brotherhood they had, what the other miners would slack off a bit. So the new miner could make 16 tons on his very first day. And that's where that song comes from. What do you think of it?
Cool. Let's play it. You ready?
Yeah, play it.
All right.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons. A number 9 coal and the straw boss said, well, to bless my soul, you load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't know a high-toned woman make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
And by the way, as another historical note, the audience might like to understand and hear, number nine coal has a real meaning. Number nine coal was like the best coal. And it was usually deeper in the earth. They had number 11 coal above it, number 13 above the 11. It was like number nine coal was like what they considered the richer, but you had to go deeper to get it. And that's also symbolically of people that do great things in their life and Americans that achieve the most. They dug deeper. They went deeper. They did more. They went the extra mile in whatever work they did or job they did or business they started or enterprise they entered, or whether it was exploring the world or conquering the world or fighting in a battle or anything they did. They dug the deeper coal. They dug the most valuable coal. They extracted the coal from the earth of their spirit, their mind, their soul, and they put it on display in the life they built for themselves and their family.
Very well said, Dave. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to get into another round of calls. Now, what I'm going to do next week is I'm going to list out the names of the people in a row, because I, you know, there's some people who come and go. Guy was in here for a while, and he dropped out for whatever reason or reasons. But at any rate, I'll let you know what order you're in. So we're going to go Russ again. We're going to go Robert. We're going to go Richard. We're going to go Jimmy. We're going to go Goose. Now, if new people come in who haven't been in before, we're going to get to them before, and you'll know that. All right, so let's bring in Russ, and we're going to go fast this time. Okay. All right, because we don't have much time left. Russ, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I think what happens sometimes, you know, is we think, you know, for the Jews, we recognize all the problems they've caused, and they figure, you know, the Muslims, the Islamists are enemies of the Jews, so they're probably our friends. But, you know, you can have two enemies at the same time, and the second enemy can be just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than the first enemy. And I think it's probably true that we've suffered more damage at the hands of the Jews to this point. But going forward, Islam is really catching on in Europe. It's spreading in European cities are really being ruined by...
Well, here's the situation. I agree with you that there's going to be a lot of imminent, prescient threats. But here's what I suggest to you. There is no possible way at all that we're ever going to get our soul free, our spirit free, and have the strength and the power to save our people from any threat, whatever the threat may be, unless we overcome the Jewish threat. Because don't you understand, Jewish Hollywood, Jewish propaganda, Jewish lies permeate our soul. They teach our people to hate themselves. They teach our children to hate themselves. The other day I was talking right in this program about a movie I wanted to always see because I wanted to know about this movie. I knew it was an anti-white movie. And I watched it Sunday 2 weeks ago before I did this show. And the show was called Little Big Men. And it was Dustin Hoffman who was in the movie, a Jewish actor. It was a Jewish director, totally Jewish production. And it was just a vicious hate whitey propaganda film about settlers going west. They get raided by Indians. The Indians that did raid them murdered them, raped the little boys and girls and all that kind of crap. And in the process of this film, to show you how these Jews are always putting crap on us, Dustin Hoffman's sister, like a nice blonde girl, you know, this young blonde girl, probably 12 years old, you know, was dreaming and was dreaming about how that she was feeling neglected because she wasn't being raped and sexually molested by the Indians. Now, you can't make this crap up. And of course, there's young white kids to go to these movies too, right? And this is the kind of image they want to see. Like somehow it's really cool. It's really cool idea for an Indian to rape you. Now another Indian came along. He was called part of the human being tribe, which was a really play on word. How the Indians were human beings, and the whole movie was about how evil and vile and murderous and horrible white people were. And this was way back in the 1970s. I mean, what you got to understand, sir, is the reason that we're having this immigration problem, the reason we're having all of this problem, the reason why we're having the spiritual destruction is because the Jews have taken over this damn world. They've taken over the minds of so many of our people. They infect us. It's like a virus in our brain. And until we realize that and we free ourselves from that, and until we understand where this is coming from, because that is the fountainhead. That is the source of the poison. That's the poison that's in our wells, which you're drinking from every day of our intellectual life, every day of our educational life, every day of our entertainment life. And they're poisonous every day. Until we get our minds free, our souls free, so to speak, there's no way we're going to save ourselves. So I say that the Jewish question is the overwhelming question. The first task we have is to free ourselves, to free our minds, to understand our true heritage and truth, and understand that these Jews are poisoning us. And until we don't understand that, now I'm not saying every Jew is, I'm not saying every Jew is a terrible person, that we should kill Jews or whatever. I am saying that we have to overthrow this Jewish power, and we have to get people to recognize this Jewish power. And when you start digging into whatever you want to dig into, you want to dig into pornography, you want to dig into the Sackler family and the drugs that they spread to us. You want to dig into all the movies that glorify drugs for our kids. How many of our kids have faced drug addiction and so forth? So I don't know what that is. But
I don't know. Okay, Russ, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Until you realize that, until you understand that, you're never, ever, and our people are never, ever going to be able to free themselves and establish their existence as a people and survival in the future.
Russ is getting it. That's why he's here.
I know.
Russ, we'll get you back in, buddy.
But I'm just saying that.
All right. He looks. Look at Russ. He looks shell shocked. See, he's like, holy mackerel! If the Jew was never here, none of this stuff would happen.
Absolutely.
All right, Russ. Thanks, buddy. Okay, Dave. We're going
to
play.
Understanding that though is the key to our survival.
Exactly.
If you don't understand that, then you don't understand why any of this is happening.
Absolutely. We're going to play a video clip. Ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. It's about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. Ready?
Yeah.
We'll be right back. You believe in Jesus?
Yes, sir. Sir.
Well, you're going to meet him.
Those were the days, Dave. We got.
By the way, you
we
made
got,
me think of something.
Yeah,
it's one thing good about a discussion because we're always thinking.
Well, we got Rabbi Shmuley here.
I know, but I just got to make a quick comment.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about coal and like 16 tons and number 9 coal and all that. And one of the greatest metaphors you've always used is the fact that where does the most precious stone come from? It actually comes from coal and how it withstands pressure. And the truth is that the pressure that was always put about on European mankind, out of that pressure came the diamonds of our civilization and culture and values, and even including our things like justice and freedom, all these other things. It really came from struggling for freedom, and it came from the struggling or the pressure of our enemies that threatened our very existence. And I just thought about that.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good. We've got Shmuley Ben Shekelheim.
Shalom, Dr. Duke. Shalom, Dave Gaharry.
It's a real rabbi.
Oh, rabbi.
Yes. Go ahead, rabbi.
That last statement, Dr. Duke, that was mighty white of you. That was an extremely white thing to say right there. I have to compliment you on that.
Which statement?
That one
so many I've been
with the diamonds just now. Yeah. That was extreme. That was very white of you. So it's actually me, CB.
You know what makes diamonds so important and so valuable, right? Is they're so rare. And the truth is our people are a tiny minority of the world, but I got to be proud of the fact. And I'm not a person that condemns my people. I'm not saying our people did everything right in the world. But I am proud of the fact of the art and the literature and the music and the architecture, the principles of freedom and justice that much of the world share that the white race has given to this world. And it's that rarity that makes it, in a way, so valuable. And I do think whites have been, unlike the Jews, where they've been a force for every sort of corruption that you can imagine, we've really been a force for justice. Yeah, we did have slavery, no question about it, for a while. But guess what? It was the Europeans, for instance, that ended slavery globally. The British Empire, for instance, were once trafficked in slavery. They realized this was not the right kind of mechanism that mankind and white people should be engaged in. And not only did they end slavery themselves in their own lands, in their own lands they controlled, they also spent lots of money and lots of danger and time and effort to police the seas and stop slavery wherever it showed up all over the world, in the seas and the oceans of the world. That's a pretty good example of the difference between a people who try to make the world a better place and a people that try to use the world to exploit it in all the ways, like the Jews did in the Opium Wars, for instance, in China. It's a perfect example.
I couldn't agree with you more, good sir. As Asmodor, I don't know whatever happened to Asmodor. I used to enjoy his podcast. As he said, white culture is the best culture, plain and simple.
Well, I don't know if we're the best, but you know what we are? It's certainly the best for us. And I do believe that I demand that white people do the right things. I will not accept my country or the leadership of this country going and, say, killing 500,000 Iraqi little babies because they can't get antibiotics, right? Or they can't get the food they need in that desert kingdom because of the Jews who rule over us. We have to take responsibility for our governments.
I agree.
And I am not. I'm going to be one white man that's not going to let his people exploit or harm any other people. I will defend to the death, if I have to, the freedom and existence of my children and my people. But at the same time, I will not couch. I will not cotton to any or support in any way any sort of exploitation or harm to other people in the world that if I could have any influence on it whatsoever. And I will make sacrifices if I have to. I will defend the rights of my people and I will defend the rights of all people. And if I didn't do that, I don't think I'd be living up to the values that my people represent.
I wouldn't agree. Be living up. Rabbi, you have a question?
Well, yeah, well, Rabbi, actually, I want to do a little something different. I want to sing you gentlemen a quick little song here that I enjoyed the song you played earlier. This is called 16 Tons of Gold. Okay. So forgive my Yiddish singing voice.
Go ahead.
Shmuley went to the Federal Reserve and stole 16 tons of gold from the American people, and he couldn't get into heaven because not only did he kill Jesus Christ, but he's a big asshole.
Very good.
I'm working on a rap version. I think the rap version is going to be way better.
I think you got something there, Mr. Schmiede.
Sign me for like a million, bajillion, fafillion, gazillion dollars, like all these.
Don't you love these Jewish names like Smuley Botich? Oh, my God.
Where do they come up with these things?
And this guy's a rabbi, right? And he has a dildo in a porn store that he promotes with his daughter.
And did the media say anything about this asshole? Yeah, did they say anything negative?
No.
Okay. Rabbi, we'll get you back in, buddy, in the lightning round.
All right, mazel tov, my friend.
Yes. All right, Robert from Yuma, you got the floor, buddy. What's your question?
Dr. Duke, I want to know how the Jewish people or the Jewish establishment legalized pornography in America. I don't want to know their motivation.
He told you.
They legalized it. Through the judiciary system, because they basically told Americans that this is their spiel.
Dave, hold on a second, but Dave, hold on. Robert, listen, he told you before. He gave you the years and the court cases. Yeah, he did. But what I'm going to say is, I'm just telling you, what I'm going to say is we're going to get to the next call because we're running out of time. So just, do you listen to the old shows?
Well, I can just get two sentences, no, right?
Okay, they just two sentences, and then we got to go.
They told us that freedom of speech meant freedom to do the most disgusting, vile, sick, poisonous porn that hurt children and adults. And they use that as their excuse, but that's what they always do. It's the same principle of getting somebody out of prison on the basis of a technicality. Freedom of speech our ancestors never viewed pornography as an expression of freedom of speech. It was always illegal in Western society. It was always something that was condemned. And it's not freedom of speech. It's nothing more than sickness, and it destroys lives.
I understand all that, but Dr. Duke, but...
Well, what don't you understand?
Was there a court case, like, sponsored by the...
Well, there was many court cases. The Supreme Court of the United States ruled that, you know, legalized porn. And the Supreme Court, I don't remember the name of the case, but I remember that they argued that this was freedom of speech, that pornography was protected.
Okay, all right, we got to get the next call. All right, Robert.
That's all you
all
right,
buddy.
Know.
Okay, Richard, go ahead, buddy. Lightning round.
What's up? Well, as it's the lightning round, I wanted to ask David Duke whether he felt that Mustache Man, the Austrian painter, will ever be de-demonized, will be able to reclaim the ideas of that man again.
Well, I think that's a good question. It's a short answer. He'll only ever be seen in an honest and a fair way when the Jewish power structure over the minds and the central nervous system of European mankind is broken. When that power is broken and people begin to see both sides of the equation and see him in an honest way, I think they'll get a very different impression of him. I'm not saying he was a perfect man. Nobody is. But I do think that he has... no more responsibility for the war than all the other warring parties. In fact, I believe probably has a less responsibility. And he tried to make peace. And if you value peace, if you say that starting the war was the greatest crime, the truth is that from the very beginning when that war started, he said, look, we'll go back to our original 1914 borders. Let's make peace. Let's stop this world war that will kill millions of people. And we wanted to do this. And we don't want anything special. We don't want to keep controlling Poland. So he tried to make peace. And
all right, we got to go.
By itself, it should be enough to make people even rethink
Richard, thanks,
everything
buddy.
They know about the man. How's that sound?
Thanks, Richard. Okay. Dave, after show for a couple minutes, 10
couple
minutes?
Minutes. That's
okay.
All.
Go ahead, Dave. Let the listeners know where they can find you during the week.
Well, I'm going to be on the program tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Rents Radio Network, rentsradio.com or rents.com. And you can also find my older shows at davidduke.com. Just look at it under the radio show and then click on the link. It's HR, which means human rights, HR Radio, RADIO.net. And you can find my older shows. And we had some fantastic shows this last week. A great show, including last Friday with Mark Collette. I hope you all listened in.
Okay. And what's your address in case someone wants to send you some shekels in the mail?
We need some shekels right now. It's box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470.
Okay, cool. So, folks, we're going to have an after-show show, so hang out. Sorry we couldn't get you guys in. We can get you in the after-show show. And go to Dissident Press, dissident.press, and get Jason Kessler's new book. And, Dave, I'll send you the Gab link so you can put it on your Gab. And we'll see you next week. Same bat time. Same bat channel.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.